Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spoken Heard. My name is Susan W. Chase, and today I am pleased to bring to you the work of Dame Michael Downs. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing quite well. How have you been? What have you been up to? What are you doing?
I'm currently living in Columbus, Ohio, after bouncing around the country quite a bit from most of my 20s. I'm working just a regular old office job, but I spend a lot of my time, I'm currently working on a novel of sorts about my time in Seattle when I worked at a CD dive motel and everything I saw there and everything I went through. And so that's kind of been my large focus right now.
Excellent. What's the novel going to be called?
It is tentatively called Devour, as it's going to talk about my obsessive compulsive eating disorder, as well as my alcoholism and my kind of diving into that as a coping mechanism, and then also, you know, trying to not be devoured by this awful place that I was in,
right.
While I was there.
Right. Wow. That sounds really great. Do you have any idea when the book will come out?
I am still in the first draft phase of it. I've been writing it for about 8 years. It kind of took a back seat for a little while. So I have some goals. I'm hoping maybe in the next year and a half to 2 years, it'll actually be finished and ready for publication.
Wow, that sounds great. Keep me posted, because I'd really love to know more about it and to hear about it when it comes out. I'd love to get a copy.
Absolutely.
Okay, perfect. So, Dana, I was wondering if I could prevail upon you as we start to read us something.
Absolutely. I have a poem ready. I actually have a series of poems. This one was written in February of 2009, and I then have the second poem I actually wrote a week ago. So I hadn't been writing much over the last 9 years due to my drinking, which had become increasingly worse over the years. And so this poem is one of the first fully realized new poems that I'd written. That'll be the second poem I read. But this poem is called Letter to a Future Lover, and it was kind of a staple when I was on tour and sometimes requested. So this is Letter to a Future Lover. The last time I dreamt you, you came to me with violin bow fingers, played my bones like a concerto. You made this body sound beautiful. When I awoke, I wrote you this letter. Dear future lover, Pablo Picasso once said, I paint things as I think them, not as I see them. So tell me, future lover, how do you think me? What brushstrokes will you invent to put me to canvas, to brick, driftwood? What width of bristle will you use to define me? What parts will you accentuate? Will it look anything like my self-portrait, painted under unforgiving fluorescence? What part will you paint first? How many times have we held hands like corsets? Will you paint me with lace for fingers? Show me what my lips feel like. Do they have the rhythm like finger snaps and hips? Can you paint them dancing a pop and lock or maybe a pirouette? Will they even be on my face? Because I imagine that I have blown you a lot of kisses. Where are my ears? Do you have pigments that can translate their wiggle? Can you add the words that linger like tattoos on the lobes? Does my beard translate to fire? Tell me, future lover, what features you can't see will you choose to translate? Will my words manifest themselves as an open mouth and a skilled tongue? Do you know the way it twists and bends when I whisper your name? Will my soft touch be forearms, built like pillows? Will my torso be curved like a spoon, bent back and ready to receive you, lover? Should you ever paint that portrait? Would you ever let me see it?
Yeah. So how long ago? You said this was written quite a while ago.
Yes, I...
Yes. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying yes. I wrote it when I first got to Seattle, and I had met a woman who was there for just a few days, and we had a really big spark, but it was just one of those, I'm in town for a few days, and so that's what had inspired it.
Interesting. I love it. I think that, you know, the depth of your poetry is amazing, and the kinds of metaphor that you use are really, really very beautiful.
Thank you.
So how have you been doing? I know that you've been out of the poetry scene for a while. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I started doing slam poetry and spoken word back in about 2006, and I dove headfirst into it. I was going to 3-4 slams a week. I started in New Jersey as part of the Loser Slam crew with Chad Anderson, Nicole Homer, Connor Dooley, Chris Rockwell, and all these great Central Jersey poets, and even by virtue of being so close in New York City with, you know, John Sands, Dean Enderly, Rachel McKibbins, Marty McConnell, all of these great poets, and so they were kind of like my first mentors. And by 2010, I was going on my first tour. I competed in my first nationals in 2008 as part of Loser Slam, and then I moved out to Seattle about 6 months later to write and learn with, you know, Tara Hardy and Karen Finney Frock and those poets that were out there just doing great work. And by 2010, I went on tour. I did a 4-month tour around the country twice. Just riding the Greyhound. I did over 500 hours on the Greyhound, but my drinking had always been kind of a thing. I was a big party drinker. People were, I was kind of well known for the, I'm a very large person, so I was kind of known for the ungodly amounts of alcohol I could drink at once, and some people were worried, and I always brushed them off, like, hey, I'm just having a good time. When the tour ended, I had two options. It was either to go back to the motel, which everyone was telling me I couldn't do because it was such a dangerous place, and it was definitely starting to devour me, and for lack of a better term, and my drinking was really bad, and so my other option was to come to Columbus and live with rent a room from someone, and I did that for a little while. And then I met my former partner. We just about 6 months ago ended our relationship. But during that time, I was in Columbus and I wasn't touring. I wasn't a part of the local scene by my own choice. I just kind of shuttered myself and I started drinking, and I was drinking alone, many nights a week, often to blacking out. And, you know, part of me was still in love with that romanticized, struggling artist, you know, write drunk, edit sober, but I wouldn't even write. I'd sit there in front of my computer for 4 or 5 hours after my partner went asleep alone, you know, sit there alone in the dark with the TV on with the computer, and I'd tell her, oh, I'm writing, and I'd tell people, oh, I'm writing, and I would drink, you know, copious amounts of cheap hard liquor until I don't remember what happened, and I'd wake up the next morning in bed with still a blank Word document on my computer, and I wasn't writing. I completely stopped writing poetry. I gave a shot at doing stand-up comedy, which I did, you know, in local open mics and stuff, but then even then I just, you know, it became about the drinking, and so I feel like completely lost. I let myself lose my art and my expression, and something that honestly got me through some of the hardest times in my life. I gave it up to alcohol because it was killing my creative spirit. I described it as drowning the muse. There was nothing there for me to write about because I wasn't feeling any emotions. I was drowning them all, and there was nothing left to write about.
Yeah. Wow. That's an amazingly private thing to admit to us all too. So I really appreciate your candidness with what you're discussing with me. So did you end up going into, did you continue to live with a partner, and did you continue to, you didn't do any open mics or anything, right?
No, I was in Columbus for almost a year, maybe a year and a half, and Scott, the great Scott Woods, who is, you know, as a lot of people know, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, a great writer, performer, organizer, and he actually reached out to me on Facebook and said, hey, I heard you're in Columbus. Why aren't you coming out to the shows? And I went out to two, maybe. But with my drinking, because I wasn't addressing any of the things I was going through, some childhood trauma that I had gone through, some and a lot. I mean, there was unfortunately quite a bit of childhood trauma. And I wasn't addressing anything, so I wound up almost, because I was drinking so much, developing social anxiety. So I was with this partner for 6 years, and I kind of allowed myself to, because I'm a very, very social person, very outspoken, and very want to be the life of the party and attract crowds and tell stories. I mean, I call myself a storyteller, and I let the drinking kind of make me socially awkward or make me not want to be in crowds, because I just want to stay home and drink, and I'd want to not feel what I was feeling. And so, no, I didn't go to any open mics, I wasn't trying to publish or anything, I didn't do much at all. And then in September of 2015, I kind of hit my limit, and I had a nervous breakdown. I did make an attempt on my life using alcohol, and I woke up the next morning and realized it hadn't worked. And I called my doctor, who I have a really great relationship with, and I told him what happened, and he said, you need to stop right now. You need to stop right now. If you feel anything, if you feel like you need to end your life again, you know, I beg of you to go to Columbus is a really great free mental health hospital called Netcare, where you don't need insurance. You can go, and they have a crisis. They have a crisis unit where it's just like a 10-room hospital almost, with just some beds where you can kind of come out of your crisis. And they have a step down unit and a down unit. When I came out, I was feeling so much better. I finally had a cocktail of meds that are doing wonders. I actually had diagnoses, that honestly I felt that, you know, that once the doctor says, hey, I think this is what you might have, like bipolar, which is something that I have, and you know, the doctor say, hey, these are the symptoms of bipolar. And I say, wow, I've had these symptoms almost my whole life. Like, and no one kind of ever caught it. Doctors never caught it. And I think a large part of that was I was drowning in alcohol for almost 10 years. And so, I just celebrated 16 months sober back on April 13th.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's really wonderful. I hope that things continue to go well for you, because I know that it's a big struggle, and that every day you have to deal with that temptation when you're an addict.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm proud of you. I think that's really wonderful. And we're about
halfway
through the show. You're welcome. I was hoping that maybe I could get you to read a second piece.
Absolutely. So this second piece is it is the letter to another future lover. I wrote this about 2 weeks ago. No, it was about a week ago, actually, and I was literally editing it up to the minute before we spoke. I have a friend that I'm hanging out with, and I was just reading it to her, and I was like, what do you think of this? What do you think of this word? So this is letter to another future lover. The last time I dreamt you, you sang me a lullaby as I drifted off to sleep in all eight of your arms. Your voice swirling softly into my ear, and I lived a dream within a dream. Dear future lover, John Keats once said, touch has a memory, so tell me, what memories do you have of the first time we touched, which shiver do you flash back to? Is it your knuckles, my fingertips sliding over them the first time I move to hold your hand? Is it the spot on your hip I lazily drag the tip of my index finger while tracing your holy curvature? When did you first notice the quickening of your heart, in sync with mine, the moment I saw you, or was it our warm breaths clashing in the space between our lips just before the first? Tell me, future lover, while your teeth graze my ear, where do you keep the memories from a time you haven't yet lived? Is my touch velvet electric, sending bolts to the tips of your nerves, to the center of who you are? Or is the sparks of clinking flint a fire set beneath the skin? Will you keep these memories safe? Take them out often to remember me until we finally touch.
That, again, is really beautiful. So you are just working on that now.
Yeah, I wrote the first draft about a week ago. I was at work, and work was slow, and I was just like, hey, I need to update this poem. This is a new me, and touch is a very important sense to me, whether it's physical touch with another human being or even just, you know, sometimes just feeling stimulated by, you know, a soft cloth or, you know, just being in that moment and feeling the way, you know, touching something kind of radiates throughout your body. I said, you know, it's such an important part of relationships often, and that I wanted to really honor that. I wrote that, and then I literally, I looked at it once a couple days ago, and then I was thinking, oh, I'd love to read these two poems together. And then, up until about 10 minutes, 15, 20 minutes ago, I was editing it on the go.
That sounds wonderful, and you did a great job. I love the part in the beginning about holding you in 8 arms. I just think that that's a beautiful way to start things out with the image of, like, the octopus.
I love octopi, and I'm hoping to get an octopus tattoo soon. I love the octopus and its resilient nature and the way it can. I actually have another poem I won't be reading today, but it's called Octopus Heart. You can find it, like, on I have a Tumblr and things like that. And it was very much a kind of awakening to my the way my heart works. And I wrote it 7 years ago. It was actually, I wrote it for a 30-30 back in 2010 while I was on tour. And it's just about how, you know, the octopus can stretch and bend. You can look at a giant octopus and watch it go through a hole the size of a quarter, or they're known to flatten themselves. They're known to flatten themselves and walk under doors to get into another tank in an aquarium. And so they're just so flexible, and they just do so much with what they have. And I feel like that is like a real representation of my heart. I happen to bring the octopus image into a lot of my writing.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's really wonderful. I didn't know you had, like, this connection, like your spirit animal octopus kind of thing going on. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, do you regularly attend open mics now, or when people want to get some of your work, Dane, where should they go to find you, to find your work?
My current work isn't really of much. I've also been writing essays, actually. I recently came out as a non-binary femme person and as queer. And I'm kind of living that life and joining that community in particular. And I actually wrote an essay about toxic masculinity and children and how it affects children and their experience, especially those who are non-binary, who don't identify with the gender they were assigned at birth. And that you can find on rollreboot.org. It's under the name Dane Maggie Down. I recently changed my middle name from Michael to Maggie. And so you can find that essay there, or you can Google Dane Michaeldown, and there are several YouTube videos of my work. I would like to say there's a content warning. Some of that work can be very heavy, no pun intended, on one of my poems that's more well-known is a poem called Weight, and it's about being a very large person in society, and then there are some other poems that can be a little triggering for some people. And then there's a few. I was published on the Legendary and Radius.org, RadiusLit.org. They published an essay of mine a few years ago, which is actually related to one of my biggest writing regrets. One, I had tried to put together a bullying a poetry compilation for bullying, and because of my drinking and my depression, I lost it. I had accepted poetry. I had sent out letters accepting poems, and then it never got put together. And it's one of my biggest regrets and shames, as far as, you know, things that happened in my drinking and in my creative life, because I feel like it could have been such a big help to people, and it got lost to my drinking and to time.
Yeah.
But there is an essay about bullying and the artist at the Radius website, under Dane Michaeldown also.
Excellent. Excellent. And when we want to get a copy of your novel in a year or so, do you know if you're going to go through Amazon, or do you have any idea?
I'm hoping to go through traditional publishing. I'll definitely be promoting it. Yeah, I'm hoping to go through traditional publishing routes. I think that I have a really good story. I think I have a unique take on living in a place with, where you're constantly surrounded by those who are drug addicted, and those people who take advantage of the drug addicted, and people who are just down and out on their luck, and the mentally ill. I've likened it in poetry to being the warden of a mental hospital where there are no locks. And everyone's just running amok, and so I feel like I have a truly unique story. So I'm really hoping that once it's written, my Twitter is Dane Maggie Down, D-A-I-N, and then Maggie Down, and you can find me there. You can Google it, you'll find these things, and I'll be updating there. I post anything that's published as far as essays. I post those there too.
Yeah. Do you think that, like, I know that you have a dual diagnosis and that you have mental illness, and you also are dealing with addiction issues. Do you think that we're talking about Devour, and let me know if this is getting too personal. Do you think that your compulsion to eat is also like an addiction with you that you're trying to overcome?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I wrote a litany poem a couple of years ago after a Rachel McKibben's prompt, and it was literally, I eat when I'm happy, I eat when I'm sad, I eat when I'm bored, I eat when I'm nervous, I eat when I eat, you know, I feel bad when I eat too much, and then, you know, and it's almost as if I feel anything, I want to eat. I want to eat to celebrate a good time. Hey, it's my birthday, let's go wild, or hey, it's Friday, let's go wild, you know. I truly believe that compulsive overeating and binge eating is absolutely, there's absolutely a correlation to addiction.
Yeah. Indeed. Addiction can be so many different things, and so many people just assume that it's either drugs or alcohol, but there are other addictions as well that are just as serious. How did it
get... Yeah.
Like, have you told your family and stuff about... Okay, go ahead, please.
Oh, I was just going to say that, and a lot of times when, like, and a lot of times food addiction isn't taken seriously because, you know, they'll say, oh, you know, the alcoholic, he can't control himself, it's a disease, but then overeating is, oh, they just lack self-control, or they don't care about themselves,
right,
or they don't know about nutrition, and, you know, and I said recently, like, there isn't a person who weighs like over 300 pounds. I currently weigh 590 pounds. I'm going through the process of potentially having bariatric surgery. I've been seeing counselors and doing really well with my binge. I haven't actually had a binge in about 2.5 months. And I'm doing really well with that. Thank you. And so I'm doing really well with that, and I am, you know, I'm working towards potentially having bariatric surgery so that, you know, I mean, I'm healthy. Doctors are always baffled when they take my blood and they do the test, and my blood pressure and all those things are fine. But there's wear and tear, and I need to lose weight so that I can continue to be mobile and to, you know, because it's not going to stay that way. And, you know, so a lot of times people just assume that, oh, they just lack self-control. But really, it is an addiction, and it's an addiction in which we can't just go cold turkey. I can stop drinking and live without ever drinking again. I can't live without ever eating again.
Right. Right. Dane, we're coming into the last few minutes of the show. I want to thank you so much for being here with us today. I just really enjoyed your poetry, and I think that, again, I'm honored that you chose today to talk about some of the tough issues in your life. I just also want to point out that your Twitter is Twitter at Dane Maggie Down, all one word, at D-A-I-N Maggie Down. And if you could, I was hoping you could read us out of the show.
I can, absolutely. This poem is called Clench. It was another 30 for 30 back I wrote while I was on tour. And it's kind of about anxiety and mental illness even. So thank you so much for having me, Susan.
Of course.
For gnawing. Sustenance to the sinners. The saints will have to wait for their feast. I am bourbon basted and stuffed with all the best bullshit. I am yours for the tenderizing. Pound on flesh like lovers grip sheets. This too is your release. Born and bred for slaughter. I have never been called a soldier. Bravery breaks like a backbone. I'd quicker hide inside myself before I spoke up. When I find Darwin, I will beg him for a shell. Or scales, or dynamite skin.
Thank you again so much for being our guest today. Next week, my guest will be Jamal J. Skills Hennant. And until next week, be kind to one another. This is Spoken Heard. I'm Susan Dolby Chase.